Hello and welcome to the Impact Podcast from us at Impact Wales. We're Finn and Jane and every week we'll be bringing you lots of discussion, comments and opinion on everything research and education. We'll be talking professional learning, what's happening in the education world and everything in between to help you make a difference in your school.
Hello Jane.
Hi Finn.
We're a little bit manic this morning, aren't
we? We are. It's a Monday morning we're recording our podcast today and we don't normally do a Monday morning.
No, we don't. We normally do it at the end of the week where we're feeling a little less. Well, no, I mean, normally at the end of the week and at the beginning of the week, we're pretty much the same. But yeah, like, we're doing it
we're
on
not
Monday
starting
morning.
We're not starting the week off very well this week. Oh, no. We'll just put that out there.
No. So I've had quite a morning already and it is only 10:30.
Yeah.
Really quite a stress up, but we won't go into that. But it's, yeah, so we are.
Well, we feel a bit ranty today.
We are feeling a little bit ranty, but the title of our podcast today, Do Teachers Really Feel Ready for September 2022? The reason that, and we did all the bullet points for this podcast last week, so that, and the kind of the focus of today's podcast is the practitioner survey.
Well, that went out on a blog on Twitter on last week, so Friday.
It did. And it appeared in Dusk, halfway down Dusk.
It was tucked away in Dusk, let's be honest now. It was right down the bottom somewhere.
Yeah, it was tucked away.
Oh, what's that?
But we found that and we had a look at it. And so we had already set out all of the bullet points for this last week.
Can I just say that it was 119 pages?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. And we did spend quite a bit of time going through it and pulling it out and looking at what was going on. But since then, it's every time we do, every time we do a podcast, we set it out so that we've always got a kind of a storyline or a narrative, a reason why we're talking about it. And our reason why we're talking about this today, having read the practitioner survey and had all of the documents from Welsh Government on various other things over the last weeks, months, even years, we do feel that this particular practitioner survey is kind of telling us something we don't know.
Yeah.
All of these things have been said before.
We try really hard when we're doing our pre-podcast preamble, when you're sitting over a cup of coffee, just trying to just trying to make some sense of what we're going to do. We try really hard not to be negative.
Yeah.
But I think this one in particular, we were struggling with, you said, tell us something that we don't know.
Yeah.
But, tell us it's in a document that's less than 119 pages to start with.
Yeah. But it's what we're feeling today, I think, more than anything, is frustration.
Yeah.
We are feeling so incredibly frustrated that we have, as has been lauded for, since 2015, this amazing opportunity with this fantastic new curriculum that is going to set Wales on fire. It's going to be education, it's going to be the internationally renowned educational reform, a world-class curriculum. And yet we can see that this is really not going where we want it to go.
Well, it feels, instead of this big push towards September 2022 as this launch date where we can start working with curriculum 22 on the chalk face, I know schools already are, I feel like it's limping towards 20 September.
Would you know, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, oh,
it's like a dance squib.
What's the metaphor here? What's the metaphor here? Well, we've got dance squib. I was feeling about, the don't look up and the whole meteor racing towards us. Well, there's that, or the bulldozing through of all of this stuff that is supposed to make things better. And I feel that teachers are being run down. They're being bulldozed over.
We've got the Welsh Government bulldozer.
Yeah. And I feel, if this were a political cartoon, I think that there would be an awful lot of, teachers getting run over and squashed flat.
Yeah.
Because it's in spite of the profession going, hang on, little white flag, we can't really
please,
do
please
this.
Please slow down. Please stop.
Yeah, please help us to do this better. We're squashed flat.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating that Welsh Government say they're listening and they'll have this survey that actually was conducted in June and July of 2021. And now the results are out, and they must have had a report on this. They must have had the had the interim report, so they must have known what this said months ago. And yet, still, knowing that the profession don't feel ready, they don't feel happy, they do feel there's too much on their plate. They're not feeling like they're being supported. And yet, there's even more to do with the extension of the school day and the changing the calendar.
I also think reading beyond. Well, getting the general feeling of what was in that report is the responses from schools really feels that schools and leaders are, that the accountability weighs so heavily on what we're going to be doing with Curriculum for Wales, that that comes through the report quite clearly, but also this element of fear.
Yes.
Of getting it wrong. We can't, you know, we're in this profession for a reason because we want to make a difference. We can't get it wrong. We won't get it wrong. But it's also that fear and that worry that are we doing the right thing?
Yeah. And I think that in a report like this, obviously you're going to look at the stats. Obviously you're going to get the you know, a steer, a feeling for how are the profession really feeling. But I think that if I were in a position of responsibility and this was presented to me, I would be looking for, but where are things not right? And what does that tell us about what's actually going on? You know, like you were saying, reading between the lines, you know, are the education department actually reading between the lines and seeing what is really going on for teachers and how fearful, like you say, they are of getting things wrong, of not doing it right, of being caught out or, you know, pointed out by ESTON or external monitoring. And we don't really know how that's going to work. And there is this real fear at that. And I think, I mean, there was a tweet out. Askell put a tweet out, which I just want to read out because I think that kind of
sets where we are. Just to put this in context as well, this is the week that it was broken in the national news, not just the Welsh news, about the extending the school day pilot. And it was because I picked it up. I think it was in either the Times or the Guardian. It was headlined some of the other tabloid papers.
It's been picked
papers.
Up everywhere, isn't it?
But even though we knew about it
a few weeks ago.
Well, before Christmas, wasn't it? It was touted.
Didn't we do a podcast?
Yeah, it was
on
just
it
before
well.
Christmas, wasn't it?
Okay. But this is what the Askell tweet said, and it actually includes a quote from a teacher, which I think is really interesting.
It's Askell Cymru, isn't it?
Askell Cymru, yes. So the tweet says, "This is not the time for more reforms to the school day and year. Evidence thin at best. Schools can't absorb all of this and cope with the fallout of curriculum of COVID-19. And the quote from one teacher, "The ways in which Welsh Government is making decisions feels the profession is being disrespected."
How many times have we said all along there is just, you know, the profession has been crying out in many different places and through many different organisations about there is so much going on. Please
listen. So let's just add to it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's the idea that, yes, Jeremy Miles, the minister, has created these roundtable discussions. Yes, you know, he's got lots of videos, communications on his Twitter feed, and he's had some, you know, Ask Jeremy type events, and he's constantly saying thank you. But actions speak louder than words. And it doesn't really matter how much you say, "I'm listening," if your actions represent you not having heard this message, which is, we can't cope. We can't both deliver on this world-class curriculum and manage the impact of COVID-19 so that we're all safe.
And do the normal job that we would have been doing before any of this was, you know, it was a stressful job enough before.
So whilst we would prefer to be positive.
We're descending into that.
Whilst we would prefer to be positive, you can only be positive if the things that you're going to talk about are positive things. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where the development of Curriculum for Wales, where it currently stands with, 20, maybe 19 weeks, I've counted recently, left before the full implementation minus, you know, year seven onwards. We are in a situation where a report has highlighted some significant issues and for some schools. I'm not saying it's negative throughout. It's not negative throughout. There is still a lot of positivity from head teachers on development of curriculum for Wales, a lot of positivity about people's commitment to curriculum for Wales. But what worries us is that there is enough negativity in it to signal that things are not okay.
There's a little alarm bell ringing somewhere, isn't there?
Well, a massive klaxon, yeah. I would go for. But yeah, so
there's one quote that sums up this report, isn't it? And okay. It sums up the whole, well, what we were talking about with the podcast, isn't it? And I'll just read the quote. It's clear from the survey data that disruption caused by the COVID-19 pandemic impacted schools' preparations for curriculum reform severely during the 2020-21 academic year.
Yeah. And where has that been taken into account in a meaningful way? And when we say meaningful,
it's not business as normal.
It's not business as usual. And to allow secondary schools to delay year seven until 2023 actually doesn't take that much pressure off at all, because you still have to plan for it and you still have to have year eight ready the same time. So honestly, that seems like you're giving some ground, but actually you're not giving any ground at all. And the, you know, the no more categorization and the no more having to report external assessments. Well, actually, those are two things that were part of the curriculum for Wales development anyway. Yeah. So, of course, they wouldn't be doing that, but they've just done it a little bit earlier.
And it's quite clear at the moment that Welsh Government and Quoll Wales are pushing ahead for its exams.
Yes.
As normal.
Yes. And I think that this survey has got some real kind of statements in it that really, you know, we can no longer say that Welsh Government doesn't know about these things. You know, for Scotland to have headed down this avenue and for things to have not gone well for Scotland, and they haven't gone well for Scotland, so let's be honest, you know, literacy and numeracy levels have dropped, standards have dropped, teachers are less happy. There is less consistency across the whole education system. Things have not gone well for Scotland. And yet we are making exactly the same mistakes, which is unforgivable.
That's also been picked up on Twitter over the weekend, isn't it? Is that colleagues from up in Scotland have been looking at the survey, looking at maybe our blog, and they've recognised that, you know, what was the one tweet saying, you know, we're praying for you.
Yes.
Or it's because they can see exactly the way that it's
going.
It's
a mirror image of what's happened.
They've been through
them. Yeah.
So hindsight is always very useful sometimes, isn't it?
So let's talk about the practitioner survey and let's give you a summary of what it says, what it doesn't say, and pull out some of the points that we feel if we were, you know, we were going to give some advice to the education minister or the education department or the, you know, the policy advisors in there, we were saying these are the things that you really need to look at.
Well, within the survey as well, that just to put it into some sort of perspective, there were 620 total responses to that survey. What frame of mind people were in when the survey came out? When was it? In July?
It was June 16th.
It was the end of the end of the year, wasn't it? So that's
month.
Roughly around 23% of the total population of maintained schools and PRUs in Wales. But it also categorised it down into 345 unique SLT and 222 practitioners. But that does give us an idea of, you know, it's not a massive response, but it does give us some sort of indication
it's
of where those areas concerned.
It's enough for whoever's reading it to say this
a couple
is
of red flags
worth
there,
having a look at. Yes. Okay, so the survey also points out that this was a self-selecting sample. So that obviously skews results as well, because you'll have senior leaders who feel they're further along the journey, might feel really, you know, comfortable, confident, ready to talk about it, but also those who maybe are really struggling,
who want to vent.
Who want to say, look, listen to us, this isn't working. So you need to take this into consideration that this wasn't random, this was self-selecting, and therefore, you know, they will have had an agenda. Whether that's a very
it's like any survey result, isn't it? It always just raises, it doesn't give you answers, it just raises questions for you to go and explore a little bit more.
Yeah, but I think that these questions need to be openly, transparently acknowledged, discussed, and recognised. And it'll be really interesting. So this survey report came out, but one would assume that a responsible government would have, having commissioned a survey, they would respond in some way to the report. On whether there's going to be an official response or whether there's going to be no response at all or what, you know, but they should be responding to this and addressing these things and recognizing that this can't just be spun into a positive report because it's not positive.
Yeah. I mean, if we there's a couple of bullet points here that we wanted to raise that came out from the survey. And I think the first one that we've pulled together really is this one about the head teachers felt more positive about the whole process than teachers, classroom teachers do. And I think that is very much down to the professional learning that's been made available and the fact that lots of the professional learning and the conferences have been aimed at senior leaders and head teachers, but teachers in the classroom aren't getting as much of that as
That's something else that comes up in the survey later on as well, when they're talking about the curriculum vision and whether and the different elements of the curriculums are the four purposes and the AOLEs and things like that, is that again the senior leaders feel much more confident than the teachers, and therefore the report states that whether there is a full penetration through down into all parts of the school, that is questioned,
which is a worry, because when you think of subsidiarity,
It should be everybody.
Everybody, and where we want the difference to be made, the difference is going to be made in the classroom.
Well, one of the questions I would be asking as well is that why hasn't that penetrated all areas of every school? And it may well be that we've got SLT who are very focused and very driven, but they have a depth of responsibility in other areas of school life that is stopping them from
stretched to
you know, it's not. I think it would be very easy to say, oh, well, the reason that all of the teachers don't know about this is because the head's not good enough or the senior leader's not good enough. But actually, I don't think that's the case at all. I think, I mean, having worked with a lot of senior leaders on Curriculum for Wales across Wales, I think it's absolutely clear that they are really, really focused and really working hard, really trying to squeeze every little bit of their job into these very small pockets of time that they have. And everybody's working at breakneck pace. So the fact that some teachers or some practitioners are not as aware of all of the minutiae of it as others, because there's an awful lot in there, it's not at all surprising, because it's, I think, indicative of not enough time rather than a lack of commitment or effort or focus from senior leaders.
But I think the next point really fits into that as well. It's about the feel that was that the primary colleagues were more positive throughout the survey about the curriculum process and where they were in the journey than secondary. And I think that's very much indicative as well about how primaries function and how much more difficult it is at secondary level to be able to have, particularly in COVID, to have those, you know, sessions working together, working collaboratively, you know, in a small primary school, that's a little bit easier.
Do you know what was really interesting is Jeremy Miles made a comment. I think he was being interviewed for Wales Online or something like that. And he was talking about, well, of course, primaries are further along the line.
Oh, he did.
Than secondaries, because they've been working on it longer. That's just as kind of a slight revision of history. Because actually they haven't been working on it longer. Yes, the primaries, way primary schools are structured makes it easier. They had a sort of higher starting point, but they haven't been working on it longer.
No.
And it was an interesting take on what's actually going on. Not necessarily accurate. The next bullet point, and I've just written this down here, a small but significant proportion of SLT were negative in all areas of the survey questioned about. So they didn't feel that they had enough knowledge about the curriculum. They didn't feel as committed to it as you would expect them to be. And they didn't feel they'd made enough progress. And I think that probably speaks to the survey picking out those SLT who actually want to say, no, we're not ready. We do need more support. But, we do need more help.
But is that also reflective of of colleagues who've stepped up into SLT positions during this curriculum process.
Yeah,
could be. You know, and they're, you know, you're picking up this up halfway through the process, halfway through the journey. It's like, you know, we talked to somebody who's, you know, teachers coming in from England wanted to work in Wales. Where are they in the process?
Yes.
You know, it's such a difficult,
and their understanding of what curriculum for Wales is and where it's come from and how it works and what everyone's been doing on it. It's, you know, it's very difficult to penetrate all of those depths of layers of.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that we need to think about with this is that it, you know, just like with teaching No Child Left Behind, we really cannot, in a curriculum reform era, no school, no teacher left behind. Everybody needs to be on board because we're providing for every child in Wales.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't think it matters to a certain extent how positive or negative the headline figures are. You know, if you have got enough of these, and there are plenty of these kinds of statements throughout, I think the, if you, when you read the comments on the, you know, the answers to the open questions, the feeling of, it almost feels like panic and a little bit of fear and, well, quite a lot of fear. And this kind of, you know, are you really listening? Please listen to us, because this is
really... we're professionals and we really want to get it right.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, this all sort of leads to the point that the impact of COVID has resulted in insufficient time to prep for September 2022.
Yeah.
You know, it's... if we'll look back on this time in maybe 30 years from now, if we're still alive then, but, you know, one will look back in 30 years' time and recognise that this is, has had as big an impact on the society, on quality of living, of education, on politics, on all areas of our society, as a world war.
Yeah.
And to therefore to bulldoze through business as usual and not acknowledge that really seems, I think maybe in 30 years' time, people will look back on the current administration's tenure and question whether it was the right decision.
We have to be responsive to the situation that we're in now, not where we wanted to be 5 years, 6 years ago when this was first. Was it 5 6 It was 5 6 years ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was six plus years ago.
Which is frightening.
Yes. Okay, so assessment, showing progression.
Elephant in the room.
Consistency across schools, a shared understanding of progression, and how this will feed into accountability was highlighted again and again and again. You know, when they were talking about progression, they were talking about assessment and accountability. When they were talking about planning for change, they were talking about assessment and accountability. When they were talking about support for teachers, they were talking about progression, assessment and accountability. And I think it's all very well and good. You ask a question about assessment, then you'll take those stats and you'll use those stats. But actually, what was clear from the qualitative answers to those open questions is that so many of them were about progression, assessment and accountability. And who was it who said accountability could derail this whole process? Was it Graham Donaldson?
Oh, quite possibly. We'd have to go back and have a look at that. I'm not sure. Was it Graham?
Well, I mean...
oh, sorry, Mr. Donaldson, should I say? Professor Donaldson. They could be Graham. First name Tove's here.
Well, it's been around long enough.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but it's... It's like... I don't know. It's like the, you know, the thread that runs through the whole thing, isn't it? Is that because we don't know how schools are going to be judged, because this new project, this new research project that Jeremy Miles has asked social finance to create.
But it's every time we do a session with schools, particularly schools that we're working with for the first time, and I've lost count of how many times we've had this response, is when we ask them right at the beginning, what are your worries or concerns about curriculum for Wales? And this has been since day one.
Yeah.
You can trace all of those fears and those worries back to accountability.
They will say something like, well, I'm not quite sure how we're supposed to be planning for this or how it'll look in our planning documents, because you want to show progress and we want to make sure we're showing progress because we need to record that progress. And you know that what they're actually talking about is somebody looking over their shoulder and saying, how are you showing progress? How are you capturing that?
Yeah.
Where is that evidence going to? And you know that they're actually talking about accountability.
Well, that showed on Twitter again this week. There's been a big hoo-ha over tracking.
Yes.
On a completely separate thread. And that you could feel the fear and the worry and the pylons that start to appear, because people are worried about the accountability and because they still don't know what it's going to look like. You stick with what you know.
Yeah. And just for anybody who hasn't seen it already, but as far as accountability goes, in the Curriculum for Wales era, Welsh Government have commissioned Social Finance, who are a platform creating, solution creating organisation. They're an international organisation and UK wide as well, to create an accountability prototype. And I'm using their terminology, not ours, to create a prototype and make recommendations to Welsh Government for accountability data.
But that's not out until, was it autumn 2022?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, we shouldn't laugh,
No, but you have to, because it's just so ridiculous. It's like, do this thing, create this curriculum, but we're not going to tell you how we're going to judge you on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's not quite what we wanted.
We'll tell you what we're going to judge you on just after you have to do it.
That's not what I wanted. Yeah. Anyway, right, let's start getting serious.
Okay, so most senior leaders and practitioners reported that they need more support or resources to be ready for September 2022. Most.
Yeah.
Most senior leaders and practitioners. That's very much,
particularly more in secondary and even more so Welsh medium.
Yes. Yes. Well, yes, our poor Welsh medium colleagues. I mean, I remember way back 2012, talking to schools in 2012, and they were saying Welsh medium resources for professional learning are always much, much thinner on the ground. Yeah. And, you know, we have this 1 million Welsh speakers by 2050, but we know that it's going to be a real struggle to get people to a point where they're speaking Welsh well enough to be creating technical resources and providing
the number of schools that we've worked with that are Welsh medium that have, we've delivered through the medium of English, because we're obviously not Welsh speakers, because they can't get it anywhere else.
Yes
obviously we're the best.
The Welsh medium schools that we have worked with, and there have been quite a number of Welsh medium schools that we've worked with, I'm so amazed that they're doing it in effectively what is their second language and having to constantly translate, and it's just amazing what they do.
I do remember one school we did, though, and you did do the introduction in Welsh.
I was terrified.
You
were panicking
because you were learning Welsh.
Thank you. Okay, so the report.
You're very brave.
And it was really scary. So I'm always amazed that people, you know, manage two languages as well. So the things that the report identifies and points out that Welsh Government and the middle tier should be thinking about. And the first thing is, what support do practitioners, particularly those in secondary schools, need to gain the skills, knowledge and understanding they need to design and implement their own curriculum and assessment arrangements? And I've just written after that, why is this still a question?
Yeah, this has been all along.
We are less than two terms away. And this came up in 2015.
Yeah.
Why is this still a question? What is it that either has never been provided or has been provided and hasn't hit the mark?
Yeah, it's not good enough.
Why is this not? Why are we keeping on providing support that isn't good enough or not providing support at all for some in some areas? And it's just.
And I think that's the thread of the question, isn't it? It's not about providing more support, it's making sure that the quality of the support is right, because you can provide lots and lots of resource, lots and lots of support, but if it's not doing the job that it needs to do, you know, let's cut it back, but make sure what is there is quality.
And it's not like we don't know what that should look like, because we've got lots of research out there that shows you what effective professional learning looks like, and B, what you need to support novice learners in a particular field in order to make sure that they become expert learners. You know, professional learning is just still learning. So it's, I think, given that there was a report out from the Education Endowment Foundation on
the mechanisms of effective professional learning, and I haven't seen a single piece of support that's come out from Welsh Government or other middle tier bodies in Wales.
Just recognise that.
That's recognised that. That it's well, yeah. Okay.
So something else for Welsh Government and the middle tier to be thinking about is this other question: how can all teachers be supported to understand the importance and purpose of the school's curriculum design vision? We've worked with many, many schools on being vision. Able to articulate their curriculum vision. And it's not about a school vision. No. It's about their curriculum design provision. What do they want their school curriculum to be able to do for their pupils?
And I think we often go into schools and they say, oh, yeah, we've got a vision.
Yeah.
And they pull out this document and it's a, you know, a paragraph. Yeah. And I think...
On a good day, it's a paragraph. Sometimes it's a page.
What's the point of a vision? Mm. You know, a vision is... the point of a vision, I mean, if we went back to, you know, religious visions, the point of a vision allows you to see where you're headed. Mm-hmm. And if your vision is something that is very difficult to make sense of, then you can't see where you're going.
It's not clear.
Our vision as a company organization is to make a difference, impact.
Yeah.
We want to have an impact. If it doesn't make an impact, we don't do it. And it's that simplicity of vision, that simplicity of this is what we're doing and why we're doing it.
It's so schools can have that check, isn't it? Yeah. You know, why are we doing this?
Should I teach
particular
this?
Element of our curriculum?
Should I not teach it?
Yeah.
Should I have this in our
does
curriculum?
It fit with our vision? If it does, do it.
Does it broaden horizons? Yeah. Does it not? Yeah. So that the fact that that is even there suggests that all of the support and the resources and the professional learning that's been out there for creating a school vision hasn't worked.
It goes back to our previous podcast, wasn't it? Because it was a long list of questions.
So yeah, if the questions haven't garnered the right answers, maybe don't provide questions anymore. Yeah. Let's start with some answers.
Okay. But again, that links into the next point that we're going to talk about. It's about how Welsh Government and the middle tier can ensure, how can they ensure that no school is left behind? I think we've still got this huge variation in where schools are in the journey. And how the middle tier can actually provide this targeted support for teachers and staff in the schools that really are not where they want to be, you know, behind the curve, behind some other schools. Otherwise, this gap that we're going to have from the schools that are flying ahead with their curriculum for Wales journey and schools that are still, you know, struggling, whether it's through staffing, through external factors, through might be an ESTIN,
they might priorities have a particularly challenging cohort.
You know, that, you know, how are they going to provide those that targeted support for those schools so we're not having this disparity of where schools
I know
are.
What we'll do. We'll bring along a curriculum model that gives them loads of freedom and then we'll be able to do exactly what they want. It's very much counterintuitive. You know, if you've got wide variation between, but also within schools, you actually need greater structure and support to bring that variation.
But it's been it's been highlighted for a long time as one of the greatest variations you get is between within a school. Mm-hmm. So very often within subjects within a school, particularly in secondary. But now we're beginning to look much wider, that there's much variation between schools, not just school down the road, but schools from up North Wales to compared to down South Wales, or, you know, in the middle of Wales to the west of Wales, rural inner city.
I do feel like the whole question about variation and the quality, you know, whether equity of provision is going to be something that Curriculum for Wales is actually going to deliver. I do feel like this conversation should have happened back in 2014, because I feel like, you know, oh, we've got this new curriculum model, you know, we've got these goals for education and we'll just put them together and then worry about whether they fit later. And it's only now, far too far down the line, that people are recognising that having equity of provision across Wales with a curriculum model that also provides for individuality of choice in terms of curriculum design, those two don't really match. And it's, you can't then, you know, put a square peg in a round hole.
But it was a worry that was raised right at the beginning.
I know.
I know, this is, it's,
we're still here.
It's really, yeah. It's just so frustrating to have to be talking about these things so close to the deadline and feel that Welsh Government really isn't listening to these.
We should have put a health warning on this podcast.
Oh, we should have done, yeah. If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, you may want to know about Impact Plus. If you go to www.impact.wales, you will find all of our resources, professional learning packs, professional learning films, digital workbooks.
Link to all of our podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got all of our sketch notes on there as well. And this is professional learning that makes sense. So it's research informed, it's practical, it helps you and your staff make sense of whatever it is that you're improving. We've got a really wide range of subjects, topics, content for you to look at, haven't you? What kinds of things have we got?
Well, we've got professional learning packs on things like oracy, a retrieval practice,
the science of learning.
Bit of an echo there, Finn. But lots of things that, you know, you might want to be developing in your school.
So if you're interested in finding out more, log on to our website. And as Jane said, that's www.impact.wales and click Impact Plus.
Every school is worried about assessment arrangements, creating their own assessment arrangements and making sure that they are A, doing the right thing, that is going to be seen as a good thing to do by ESTIN, by external monitoring and so on, but also is doing the right thing for the children in the school and is, you know, in line with the guidance. So providing assessment support that addresses the real concerns of schools, that actually talks about these kinds of things like accountability. So it's a need to sort out accountability and make public what the solution mm-hmm. is actually going to be. Because until that is dealt with, and until schools know, for example, what data they will have to collect, capture on pupils' assessments to show progress, whether that's across a group or across a year group or, you know, for individuals or whatever it happens to be, to include in their self-evaluation report so that, well, ESTIN can use that self-evaluation report and say, okay, enough progress has been made or expected progress has been reached. Until schools know that, how can they create the assessment arrangements? Because they don't know what it needs to fit into. I just feel, though, we're in this situation where, you know, Welsh Government have got, maybe have got an answer, but they're keeping their cards so close to their chest, but they're not telling anybody. And I think the schools are just so in the dark and it's as if there's this big gulf of schools go find out your own way and let's see if it's the actually same as close to
what I'm holding in my hand.
It is.
I don't know, it could be. Yeah. It does feel a little bit I don't know, it feels a little bit strange.
It's like a test.
Yeah, that schools, why can't you show schools what a good one and what a bad one looks like.
Yeah,
that's what we do in the classroom.
What do
Why
you
not?
Actually mean by this?
Yeah,
pages and pages of guidance and questions. And I know it is about schools coming to the conclusion about what works for them, but we've still got this accountability over everything, isn't it?
But it's really not rocket science to say, right, good assessment means assessment against a learning objective.
Yeah.
If that assessment to get that learning objective has been achieved, the assessment will show that progress has been made. Then what do you want doing with that and doing with that progress capture?
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest issues here is that when you think about capturing progress, it's very difficult to capture 30 pupils' progress in a consistent format for all 30 pupils in exactly the same way without putting things like numbers or statements or whatever it is on it.
It's ingrained in us because that's, you know, we've always, you know, a certain percentage, a certain level, a certain grade.
Well, it's not just a question of it being ingrained. How do you, at school level, say we as a school are moving forward if you haven't quantified it in some way? Because if you haven't quantified it, then it's just qualitative, anecdotal, And, you know, my judgment is subjective and it might be different to your judgment unless I put a number on it.
Yeah.
And even then, even if I have put a number on it, it can still be subjective.
It was a discussion we had with a teacher in a school a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? We were talking with an SLT group at the end of the day around assessment and how can we, you know, how can we really move away from using a number or a percentage? And it's been able to rethink assessment in a different way.
Well, one of the things that we talked about, and I can remember this conversation now, was thinking about, okay, so what are the purposes of the capturing assessment for the teacher? What are the purposes for a middle leader, for a senior leader? And for a teacher, capturing progress is about knowing what you want to teach next, not just to your group, but also to individuals. So you need mechanisms that allow you to capture where things are going wrong or really well for both individuals or the group. And whole class feedback is a fantastic way of going out. We won't go into that now. But from a middle leader perspective, if I've got a team of people, I want to know as a middle leader that they know what they're doing and they don't need any support, or that they are ready to help other people to do it. So I want to know the quality of their teaching and learning and what effect that's having on progress. So I would really just want to know how do they view progress. And it might be a simple a simpler judgment as generally speaking, on the whole, my classes are ready to move on at the end of every lesson. We might have one lesson out of five where things go a little bit awry and they're not ready to move on, either because it's more complex than I thought it was, or I haven't structured the lesson right, or, and it's having that professional discussion with that teacher is, what, how do you think progress is going in your class? Are they ready to move on? If not, why not? And what can you say about that? And having that overview of your whole department of knowing, well, I know that six out of the seven are, their classes are making progress, and they can track that back to the learning and the teaching that's going on in their class. Whereas I've got one, maybe they're an NQT, maybe they're not really sure if progress is being made, maybe they need a bit more support.
It's how do we support changing the culture of evidencing practically everything in that happens in the classroom or happens in a department or happens in a school, to be able to put the trust back to the profession. Because you know, hand on heart, when you're teaching something, whether they've got it or they haven't. But do you need it recorded on a bit of paper?
Well, this is the thing. And I'm just thinking back to some of the things that I used to do as a teacher. And I can remember teaching maths, because that's the last subject that I taught. And how difficult I found that as an English teacher with an A-level in maths. Things like, well, what do you do when you ask them to, you know, highlight the key points of this question and they can't do it? Because I really didn't know whether it was because they didn't get the maths, or because they didn't have the background, or whether they didn't get the reading comprehension that was required. And I remember going and having that discussion with my head of department, and we solved it eventually. But it's, as a teacher, I think you part of the process for a teacher is actually being able to pinpoint when progress has been made. So and that comes from a clear learning objective, an assessment that lists evidence towards that learning
identifying objective. The steps that you need to get there, that like those stepping stones. Because if, for example, you just go back to teaching maths, if you're teaching a particular concept and they're struggling with this one particular area, or this one particular concept enabled you to get to your less objective.
It's assessing that.
That's the bit that I want to make sure they've got before I move them on.
And when you think about that process, actually very little of that process at all is about capturing, recording, or talking about it.
It's intuitive, isn't it?
Well, it's and it's much more about, well, it's more about the setting the learning objective and being clear what the steps along the way of that learning objective. We're not talking about the descriptions of learning, because they're not learning objectives. It's about teachers setting their own, what is the learning in this classroom. So
we could talk about assessment all day, couldn't we?
Yeah, we've but kind of got off the point there, haven't we? So the professional learning for teachers needs to talk about assessment and progress in a way that makes sense to learning and teaching. And the accountability needs to be solved. It needs to be
teachers need to know.
Well, the narrative, I'm just going to remind everybody of this, the narrative was throughout the curriculum design, I mean, pre-pandemic, let's not forget that we were told that curriculum and assessment were being co-created at the same time. And that's clearly not the case now, because we've got accountability, which is part of assessment, that's not been created until after. So I think, you know, it's just reminding ourselves that the best way of doing it is currently not being utilised here.
Yeah. Right. So let's we've raised some concerns all the way through, but I think there were some that we want to really finish off on.
Yeah.
That came out from this, and there's this one. 67% of senior leaders and practitioners believe that their school was in need of additional support or resources to be ready for September 2022. And that's something that we've pulled out all along, isn't it? That we're still in this situation. We've got a term and a half left, realistically, where practitioners are still crying out for more resources.
And the more resources that they want are practical guidance and exemplification. Yeah. What a good one looks like, or what a bad one looks like, what it actually looks like. And just to reiterate that, 67% of respondents,
two-thirds for you mathematical pizza there,
that which also means 33% say no, we're okay.
A
third of schools are fine, are ready. A third,
with
less than 20 weeks to go.
A third of the responses.
That's
time to plan and redesign, especially post-COVID-19, because I think some schools have started the journey. That curriculum journey has been, you know, taken off a completely different path because of COVID. But again, it always goes back to time. There's, you know, we've got to find some time. We were one school, weren't we, that they'd had 3 inset days back to back. And how useful they found that. Because you can't get into something as big as curriculum redesign in a half a day, a couple of hours after school or twilight. You can't do it, because you need to immerse yourself in it. And I can remember going back to looking at curriculum, redesigning curriculum in the old days, back in the day, in secondary, 20s, which we'd always used to do in time after year 11 had gone.
Game time.
When you had those nice big blocks of time, you could have 2-3 hours one day, 2-3 hours the next day together, and you can really get
physically
into it. Into it, and you can keep coming back to it, you know, over that period of time, not to be doing it in a snatched hour here, snatched hour there.
And just to kind of put this in context as well, that pre-COVID-19, when we used to go into schools to do curriculum for Wales, and our first question would be, what worries you or concerns you? The first thing that would come up would always be time. And that was without COVID-19 all of these other initiatives that are out there as well now. So, you know, it seems to be that actually this has got worse, the plan, the time that's needed.
So it's just got squeezed, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, support for assessment and progression, practical examples and exemplification. The stats there are quite shocking. Do you want to?
You always could be giving the numbers.
I know.
45% of head teachers, 41% of practitioners knew what to do with assessment in their school.
And as we know, assessment is indistinguishable from learning and teaching, from pedagogy. You know, so we're not talking about a small thing. It's not the bolt-on thing that you do at the end of it. You know, this is the crux of the curriculum, the fact that we have nearly half of the respondents saying that they've got an issue with this.
But this also makes me think, going back to our tweets that were going over the weekend, or the end of last week, regarding assessment and trackers in particular, is that there were lots of schools that were going down the route of thinking about the tracking, but they hadn't really thought, from the conversation of some of the schools that we've been in, they hadn't really thought about, well, we've got the tracker, but what are we assessing? How are we assessing in the classroom? And then not really marrying the two up. So I think we've got to be really careful where this goes and where the conversation goes with this.
Yeah, so I don't know that we want to list all of the things here, but...
I think the next point is really important, though, because it fits in with some of the other comments we've had. This There needs to be a whole school approach. Not all teachers were aware of what SLT had done.
Yeah. And, well, is that because in times of COVID, yeah, SLT were carrying on with things, thinking, well, we need to get this done, but then didn't have enough opportunity to make sure all teachers were aware of it? Has there been issues with, you know, staff being offered missing professional learning sessions?
Yeah.
Or have they just not got to the stage where they're taking it down to all levels within the school? Yeah. There are real, real issues, and it's very, very worrying. But I think one of the points that is worth mentioning again, because it goes back to a blog that was put out in November of 2019, Busting Myths from Curriculum for Wales. Respondents were asked, what changes do you expect to be made as a result of Curriculum for Wales? You know, how is it going to be different? And one of the comments was about greater use of learner voice noted as a key change, allowing personalisation of curriculum to pupils' interests.
Mm.
Now, this smacks a little bit of a learner-led curriculum. Whereas if you go back to this blog from 2019 by Welsh Government, they quite clearly said, you know, it's they actually described it as learner influenced. But we go back to Donaldson, he's talking about a curriculum that is focused on the needs of the pupils.
Yeah.
So not about, you know, their interests, because children don't know what they do.
Learner-centered.
Completely different. Yeah. So I think just to kind of finish off, because we've said a lot of these things already, but the final point that I thought was really interesting was that the quality of training provided was criticised. And I want to quote here. This is one of the qualitative judgments, qualitative responses to open questions that was provided by a senior leader in a primary school. And I'm quoting, the training so far has been poor. The modules on managing change and vision were largely a waste of a considerable amount of time on the part of my whole SLT. I only attended out of loyalty to our school improvement advisor and the team. There has been too much theorising and not enough how-to suggestions.
Well, that fits really nicely with the crying out for resources, what a good one looks like, how to do it. If practical solutions.
If, you know,
not theory.
Yes. And this is, that encapsulates what so many schools we've heard. And I know that we're in a different position. We often get schools contacting us and saying, well, we've had some support, but it really hasn't done what we wanted to do. So we now need to work with you. And although that's nice to have a school who wants to work with us, it's also really frustrating that they've already had support. You know, we should be providing support for schools who haven't had support, but to be doing the job twice.
There's a place for looking at theory and having that understanding. And yes, it is about raising the profession. So we are all looking at the research and the theory that sits behind it. But when you're doing a job day to day alongside that and being expected to do some critical, there's only so much theory that you actually need, and you've got to crack on. And
it's not like we don't talk about theory. We do.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about it in a way that just talks about the theory. I think that there are ways of talking about theory that make it practical. And that's the point, isn't it? You use an abstract concept and make it concrete so that people really understand then what to do with it and why they should be doing things certain ways. So we hope that Welsh Government Education Department, that Jeremy Miles has read this report in detail. Hopefully they've had it for months.
It'd be interesting to see what the response, if there is a response, what it will be.
Well, I think it's crucial that there is a response and that response is not more of the same we've had before, because obviously from this report we can see that that is not cutting it, that they need to, well, we're fast running out of time, but I think there's two clear choices. They either provide practical, how-to, replicable method professional learning with exemplification.
Not more of the same.
So replicable methods with exemplification on key areas of curriculum design, assessment, progression, accountability. They answer the accountability problem before staff are expected to create assessment arrangements, or they slow down curriculum reform. We're reaching a point where it's a really stark choice, because if either of those choices are not made, I think it's set
that we will replicate what's happened in Scotland. Yeah. I don't think we can. We're too far down the line to be doing anything different. So it's a deeply frustrating difficult point to end a
and on that cheery note.
We hope you have a lovely day for the rest of the day. Don't let this bring you down. You know, you can still enjoy teaching. God, that's
but we also want to mention as well, on that we've just noticed on the podcast, there's a little button you can press.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You can send us a recorded voice note.
Yes, please do.
So please do. If there's anything from the podcast today that you want to discuss.
Or anything from any other podcast. Yeah, if you want to contact us.
Just click on it, send us a little recording, and then we'll listen. But if there's anything else that you want us to talk about.
Yeah, or you might even get on the podcast. Oh, yes.
If you'd like to.
We can.
Part of the podcast, yeah, just drops a line.
Absolutely. Because we can, if you send us a message and, you know, you want to kind of call in and give us your thoughts, and we'll put it on air. So, yeah.
Please do.
That would be great. So we'll speak to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to make sure you don't miss future episodes. You can find us online at www.impact.wales. You can also follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at Impact Wales. On Facebook and Instagram, search for Impact Wales. And on LinkedIn, search for Impact School Improvement.